I fear my love will lead me back again. I fear.
You're listening to a special podcast produced by UMFM 101.5 in partnership with the Winnipeg Folk Festival. Running Thursday, July 11th through Sunday, July 14th at picturesque Birds Hill Park, Winnipeg Folk Festival is a celebration of people and music that has been one of North America's premier outdoor music festivals for over 40 years. I'm Michael Ells, host of Thank God It's Free Range, and this episode spotlights John Mook. Mook is an Austin-based singer-songwriter by way of Uganda. He got his start doing cruise lines and hotel performances and released his debut record Flying Away on Dan Auerbach's Easy Eye Sound earlier this year. John Mook will be performing at Little Stage in the Forest on Friday, July 12th at 1:30 p.m. For the full lineup, a complete list of set times, to purchase tickets, and for more information on the Winnipeg Folk Festival, visit winnipegfolkfestival.ca.
On the sunny days, with the cloudy days, that's the only way. It's the only way I'm ever gonna find you. It's the
bringing his new album Flying Away to the Winnipeg Folk Festival. John Mook lands in the city in a few weeks, and we are excited to have him on the show beforehand. Welcome to the show, John.
Oh, thank you.
So your story, I mean, it's quite an unusual one. And I want to ask you, how much do you think happenstance plays? Because you come across your cousin's copy of We Are the World. Then you're standing in line, and if you see people standing in line and get a job singing at a hotel, someone sees your video and you get the job on the cruise line, like, do you feel happenstance plays a role, or were you kind of looking for opportunities and kind of creating your own options?
I just always liked to be, you know, to try anything that can bring an opportunity. And, like for the cruise line, seeing that video, I didn't do it for the cruise line, you know. I just made a video and just posted it because that's the way, if you live like in Uganda, someone can see that you're doing something. So it's what I always had in my mind, for people to know that you're doing something, stand up regardless of your, you know, stage of skill, and just show people that at least you're doing something. So, yeah.
Sure. Now, what was it about We Are the World that spoke to you as a song?
Well, before I found that CD, I just had many, many questions. Randomly, I would hear some songs, Western songs, playing on radio, but I was always curious, why is this music? Why does it sound like that? And when I picked up that CD, and I watched multiple people singing in just one track, it just told my mind that if all these people can sing in one track, that means you also have a voice that can fit into that track. And that really, really, really even inspired me more to keep on doing English music.
So you heard yourself in that, or at least an opportunity for yourself within a multiplicity of voices that your voice could fit in?
Absolutely. Because I listened to everyone sing. I didn't even know people who were singing in that song apart from Michael Jackson, but different voices all singing on one tune, and it was just so mind-blowing to me.
So as I understand, there's several different languages spoken in Uganda. Which, like,
yes.
What was the language spoken in your home?
At home, everyone spoke multiple languages because I speak 7 now. And at home, we always used Luganda, which is the most national language.
Right.
At least most people know that, but Uganda has like more than 50 languages.
Right, yeah. I guess Luganda is one of the most prominent. Did you sing in Luganda before you started singing in English?
No. So, I didn't know. It's funny. I didn't sing in Uganda. I tried, but when I started playing guitar and then singing with Luganda, it was just so hard because that language is all about sound. So it was just so hard to sing Luganda while playing a musical instrument, a Western musical instrument. Like, I couldn't accent everything properly. So, and I always admired English, so that's why I focused mostly on English.
Right. So then you get the job at the hotel.
Yes.
And you're asked, you know, like, because you have to put together a set, so you start kind of like adding other people's music. At what point do you start writing for yourself?
When I first wrote my first song, it was even before I got that hotel gig. Because I remember I got the hotel gig, I was returning my friend's guitar that I was borrowing. And that's when I found people applying for jobs that were not related to music. And since the hotel was new in my area, I just gave it a shot to make a line and also ask if I could sing. But before that, I remember my friend, there's a girl that was breaking up with him, and he could not write English. So I told him, can I write a letter to save your relationship? And he was like, sure. So I wrote the letter, he took it to the girl, and it worked. She was like, oh. He called me the next day, he's like, it worked, the girl is not going. I told him, can you bring my letter back? So, and that was my first song I wrote. It was the words that were in that letter.
Do you know the story Cyrano de Bergerac?
No.
Okay, so essentially there's like, you know, some person who helps woo another person for them using their words. Uh-huh. And this is very much tied to that. That there's been, it's been made into a movie, a French movie, and then an adaptation with Steve Martin. And that's this story definitely makes me think of that. So that's your first song. And you're written from the perspective of another person. At what point do you start writing more kind of like personal things? Like, because this record is very personal.
Yeah, so it's not until when I move here, because when I was on a cruise line, I was still in a confusion of, I had some things I'd written, but I was in a confusion of fear that, how am I going to sing my English mind to people who have grown up speaking English, you know? It's like I was not comfortable doing that, but I'd written other few songs. And it's not until I moved to Austin and this couple took me in to live with them. And one day I sang one of my songs and they were like, wow, I've never heard something beautiful like this. And that's when my brain starts to tell me that you are your own version. You know, keep writing and don't fear what people will think. So that's when I start writing more personal stuff.
You said there, don't fear what other people think. Up to that point, were you afraid of what other people thought?
Yeah. I was afraid. I was like, English is not the language I spoke much. Even when I moved here, my English was not that perfect. So me singing English, it just felt weird.
So then in writing in English, are you thinking these thoughts in English and writing them down? Or is there like an act of translation in terms of like, do you necessarily think these thoughts or do you have them in another language and then figure out what those thoughts are in English?
Most times the melodies are in a different language. It's random arrangement of melodies. So, which comes from the background of me growing around many sounds and many languages. So, yeah. But the words, I think them in English. Sometimes if I'm lost, I kind of switch between English and the Luganda language to translate it properly.
Right. Now, it's mostly your words, but you have one cover, and that's Labi Seafray's song.
Yeah.
And obviously, you had to do, you know, other people's work on the cruise line and in the hotel. You had a lot of opportunities or different songs you could have picked. What was it about this one song that you wanted to include it on your record?
That song, the idea came from Dan Auerbach. We were seated, and he was like, you remind me of this guy. And he played me that song. And he told me, yeah, it's a good song to learn. When I came back home, I was like, wow, this is so brilliant. You know, so I learned the song. And when I sang it to Dan, he was like, we're going to put this on the album. It sounds so good.
So speaking of Dan, as I understand it, he saw one of your videos.
Yes.
And reached out about working together. What was like, was he just like, hey, let's try something? Or did he have a clear thought about like what he wanted to do with you at that point?
At first, I think he thought I'm in Africa. He thought I was not in America. But then the good thing, I was in Austin and Kevin Womack, my manager, had some connection with people who work with Dan in Dan's studio. He had worked with them in the past. And when I told Kevin, then it made the whole connection mutual, because Dan really wanted to sign me on his album. But I didn't know who Dan is, or I didn't know who the Black Keys were. So he flew me to Nashville. We spent a whole day, me playing him songs. And he was like, John, these are beautiful songs. I'll bring in some writers to listen to your writing style and all that, and we'll see if we can change any chords or that. But he was like, this is amazing. And then the next time we met, we were going to record, which we made the whole album in 4 days, 16 songs.
And I read that you basically did every song in one take. Is that right?
Yeah, each song was one take.
Was that intentional, or did you just... You wanted to catch that immediacy, or did you just get it each time?
I was used to the songs. And the session musicians were very good music players. So each take we took, they were like, there is nothing else to add to this. It's just so beautiful. then we went to the next song.
Was it done off the floor? Like when you say there was the session musicians on each take, like did you do your vocals separately, or was this all kind of in the room together?
Everything was one at the same time.
So you said he went and got some songwriters to kind of help kind of flesh out some of the songs, or at least I imagine kind of like figuring out the instrumentation. But at its core, it's you and your guitar. He obviously gave some thought to the fact that like when you strip these down, the organ, some of the other things that are happening on the record don't need to happen for these songs.
Yeah, those all happened the way they were in the studio. Because me and Dan and other people, it was just making sure the songs are in the right time, the songs are in the right speed, the songs are in the right key. So, but when it came to the recording in studio, everything that was, you hear some songs, there is a police siren moving in a song. So the studio is next to a road and all those things were live. We left them the way everything was recorded.
Was that just because he wanted to most capture what you would be doing if you were on stage, or just like a tone that he wanted to achieve? Why that decision to kind of just like let things stand if there were sirens in the background?
I think music is art, you know. And every wrong line in a piece can be, you know, a signature of an art piece. So we hear many songs that have digital police siren, but this was a live one, you know, crossing the road. So we were lucky to get that moment in a song.
So the record as it stands, I'm very curious about kind of like how you lay it out and sequence the songs. Mm. How much discussion did you and Dan have, or did you have a good sense of kind of what song went where?
Yeah, they sent me their idea of the sequencing, but my whole the whole album is an unarranged story. From when you start to do music to when, you know, it's like an unarranged story of all my journey. And we also balanced the energies of the songs because we recorded more than 12 songs. We recorded 16 songs. So there was hard to really leave out some songs. We had to put some songs behind so that we have the 12 for the album.
What decision-making went into removing the four, or choosing which ones didn't make it?
I mean, it was probably the number. You know, we needed 12 and we had 16. So the ones we removed are still very, very, very good songs. They deserved to be on the album, but we needed only 12 songs. There is only one I switched, Hello Sunshine. It was left out, but I felt like it's a good song to be on the album. So we switched it with another song.
So you said, you know, this is a journey. This is a sequence of your life story. Runaway is the start. So leaving Uganda, this is kind of the representation of it?
Yes, Runaway. It's when I was 22, moving out of Uganda, I was by myself. And at that time, I didn't even know that I'm running from everything. All I knew is I had an opportunity to sing on a boat. And I didn't care about what else happens. And then it's not until I move and I'm now 2 years and a half in, and then you feel like a runaway. You ran away from everything, though it takes courage to run from anything good or bad. So, and that song was a good introduction of the whole album.
So that's the start of the album. Writing that closes it out, as I understand it, you wrote it after visiting a friend's, maybe grandparents,
grandmother.
In a care
yes.
home. And that
yes.
experience was got you thinking about kind of the way relatives are treated in North America versus, you know, the way they would be in Uganda. Like,
yes.
have you written many songs with kind of like a third person narrative, like where you've kind of put yourself in someone else's shoes rather than your own shoes?
Yeah, sometimes I do that a lot because I like listening to people's stories, and each person is just a masterpiece of themselves. You know, they may pass through a similar experience with other people, but everyone is unique, the way they would tell their story. And for that lady, I just looked at her and I was like, what is she thinking? And I just tried to write what she has passed through, and which took like 30 minutes to write that whole songwriting, because I was left in that room for a very short time. But it was emotional, me looking at her. She had this condition where she forgets things in the present and remembers things of people who died long time ago. So, yeah.
Right. Now, the speed in mm-hmm. which you wrote that, is that normal for you, or did it just happen that you were kind of inspired by thinking about this woman's condition and life?
Most times I write a song very fast. It takes me a long time to write a song, but when I sit and I'm writing a song, it happens that time because I always believe in that present moment. When you get out of that moment, you can't write that moment tomorrow because that moment is already past. So most times when I sit like to write a song, it's always very quick.
Right, you got to capture it.
Yeah, I have to capture just that moment, because when it passes, I can only lie to myself that I still have the same moment, but it's gone.
So speaking of moments, before I let you go, John, I want to get you to pick a song off of the record that we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking it or an anecdote about it, we'd love to hear that.
I think Hello Sunshine. It's a beautiful song about a beautiful day, and reminding people that it's not too late to show people that you love them. And when you do that, then you have to celebrate a beautiful day. So, yeah.
Well, perfect. We're looking forward to some beautiful days at Birds Hill Park, seeing you at the Winnipeg Folk Festival. John, thanks very much for taking some time. Safe travels, and very much looking forward to seeing you.
Thank you very much for having me.
I found something new. Baby, when I found you, funny what love will do when you let it show. Yesterday's door has closed, tomorrow's door who knows. Today is not too late, so let it show. Story goes round.
I'm Michael Wells, and you've been listening to a special podcast spotlighting John Moo. He'll be performing on Friday, July 12th at 1:30 p.m. at Little Stage in the Forest at Winnipeg Folk Festival. To hear more featured artists, visit umfm.com. And be sure to visit winnipegfolkfestival.ca to get tickets to this great event running July 11th through 14th at Birdsill Park. Goodbye.